This is Midwest Moxie, a show about our region's visionary entrepreneurs and the experiences that shape them. I'm your host, Kathleen Gallagher, Executive Director of Five Lakes Institute. Mo Feisel got excited about semiconductors and startups while getting his undergraduate degree at University of Waterloo. That excitement continued at University of Michigan, where he forged an unorthodox path that gave him entrepreneurial experience and, in 2014, a PhD in electrical engineering. While other newly minted PhDs took vacations to celebrate, Mo took his new startup, Ann Arbor-based Movellus, to a business plan competition. Movellus' aim is to dramatically change the way semiconductor chips are designed and achieve global energy savings in the process. The company has grown to 25 employees, has customers on three continents, and has raised more than $20 million. Mo, welcome to Midwest Moxie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You immigrated to Canada from Pakistan when you were 15, and as your family got its bearings, you attended three different high schools. That seems difficult.
It was interesting and difficult at the same time because, unlike other people in high school, I didn't have high school long friends. I had yearly friends. So there were new friends every year. But all these years later, when I actually reflect, I think that actually helped me in multiple ways. First is the ability to build rapport with new people that I meet on a daily basis. So really, show up authentically and get to know people. And that is actually quite the superpower when it comes to building a team and building a business.
Well, that's a good point. Never thought about it that way. At the end of high school, you won an award from Queen Elizabeth II. Tell us about that.
Yes. There's a medal that, probably my mom has somewhere. So Canada is a, Commonwealth country. And as a result, of course, Queen still has, attachments and strings and tentacles running into Canada. One of those things is actually, the top graduate in high school, as well as a college level, they get an award from the Queen. And sometimes often there's a scholarship associated with that as well. So I have a medal from the Queen that my mom has. But one interesting thing that, I'm actually really proud of, like to share is in 3.5 years, I went from somebody not knowing English to being, the top, graduate in the high school. That's all thanks to, the work ethic that my parents instilled in me, and as well as, somehow building the muscle of dealing with, uncertainty and new things. So I'm kind of proud of that, I guess, or my mom is proud of that.
And studying all the time, right?
And yes, of course, the workaholism and sort of the insane drive is in there as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And you sound so calm. So you weren't the typical heads down PhD student, focused on theory, labs, publications, when you got to University of Michigan. And David Wenzloff, your PhD advisor and a startup founder himself, encouraged your interest in both semiconductors and startups.
So I got really lucky. Luck has played a very critical role in all of my career. And I got lucky with the advisor who actually encouraged that. But what I want to reflect on here is my attitude. By the time I started grad school, I realized that, one of the best ways to create success in any environment is actually, sort of take a meta approach, look at, what creates success. So I took the approach of combining multiple disciplines to get quick publications, right? So combining nuclear engineering with electrical engineering. And I was, one of the most published students out of that group. But not only that, actually, another approach that I took was connecting my research with the needs of the industry in the present day, as opposed to typical PhD, which is, 10, 15 years out into the future. So that's another thing that actually helped me. In the end, I ended up, finishing my PhD in 4 years and 8 months, which is very, very fast in the land of PhDs. But fun fact, out of that, I spent 11 months away from school anyway, interacting with the industry. So if you actually count it all, it's just over 3 years in I finished my PhD. On top of that, thanks to the PhD advisor, I spent most of my last year strictly working on the business, so crashing courses at the Ross Business School at the University of Michigan, and basically, you know, learning the language of the business, which has helped me all these years later.
So the perfect recipe for a startup, which is what you did. And Movellus makes the chips that are Movellus's products are used in smart factories, satellites, data centers, and cars. But if we could just step back a minute, tell us what a semiconductor chip is.
Oh yeah, I'm sure everybody hears about semiconductor chips these days. It's you know, it's affecting and you know everybody's life, and it always has. But it's the recent supply chain challenges has brought it to the forefront. But semiconductor chip is basically the intelligence in all of our electronics. So, you know, for example, if a car has a bunch of cameras that is collecting, you know, images to process what's going on in front of the car, there is an intelligent system in the middle. It's a processor, which is built with, you know, semiconductor material, which is, you know, silicon. And that part does all the intelligent number crunching. So it makes decisions. And it is everywhere. You know, fun fact, over 1 trillion chips are shipped. Semiconductor chips are shipped per year. So if you sort of step back and look at it, that is an insane number, how many chips there are out there.
Good business to get into. So Moore's Law, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of that. It's this well-known observation that the number of transistors on a semiconductor or chip doubles every 2 years, which of course means increases in speed and capabilities of devices that are using them. Your company wants to improve chip performance without adding transistors. You know, tell us about how you want to do that, or you're doing it.
Yeah, that's correct. So we took a slightly different approach. We took more of an architectural approach. So instead of throwing more transistors at the problem, we went back to the fundamentals, the first principles. What's happening inside of the chips. So every chip has a heartbeat and a heartbeat circulation system, which is the clock network, and that is our products. So we looked at that and realized actually there is a huge opportunity in terms of bringing more efficiency, power efficiency, and performance improvement, which is really the goal of Moore's Law. Higher performance at lower cost. So we figured out a way of improving the heartbeat and the heartbeat circulation system in every single chip, and as a result of that, all of our customers are benefiting from that now, and in the future, we foresee that. We will end up creating more than, 1% energy efficiency at the global level as a result of this. That's what it comes down to, sort of fundamental heartbeat of silicon. That's what our products are.
Several years ago, an investor you were pitching asked why you were even trying to build a startup in this industry, because it's so difficult. And right out of graduate school at that, tell us about the challenges of doing the unusual thing you're doing.
Yeah, that's a great memory, and it always makes me chuckle. So we are in a very, very challenging industry. In semiconductor, typical budget for one design, maybe $100 million. So if anybody makes a mistake, that is $100 million down the drain. And not only that, it typically takes about 2 to 3 years to bring a chip to the market. So any risk is something that nobody wants. Our customers don't want, right? So as a result of that, a lot of the people that are making big moves in this industry happen to be a lot more experienced people than, myself and my co-founder. We were, fresh out of school. And when we're faced with that, then we have to, come up with other approaches on how to deal with this issue, because there's a sort of a credibility and risk and opportunity mismatch here, because there's, fresh grads trying to risk $100 million projects with customers. That's, not a good, it's a challenging situation. But we dealt with it. First of all, by finding early adopter customers, as well as leaning on a roster of advisors and coaches who have been there and done that, to make sure that we don't make any of the mistakes that could risk our customers' designs and chips. And by the way, a fun fact: we have 100% first time silicon success, so we've never had a design fail, and our recipe has worked over the years. And knock on wood, we intend on continuing that.
What makes you want to keep doing it?
So I reflect on this. I think there's a couple of things. First, this opportunity, the ability to actually bring something that I worked on and commercialize it and then make an impact. Really, we're on a mission to make the planet 1% more efficient on the low end, and potentially even 5% more efficient. I don't have to, share this with anybody. Like that's an absolute need. We need to do this. We need more and more compute. So there is, contribution aspect to it. In addition to that, it has been a great opportunity for me to grow personally, grow my, leadership skills, And, you know, best of all, like, I'm lucky, I get to choose people I work with, you know, and that's, you know, combine that with the ability to make a contribution and the ability to, you know, personally and professionally grow. I can't ask for a better life and better career here. So
you use the word lucky, and you've got kind of a philosophy about luck. Talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I believe that, you know, luck is more than 50% of what, you know, recipe for success. You know, less than 50%, what it takes is actually, you know, being comfortable with uncertainty and being open to saying yes, especially in the early on in somebody's career. You really have to be open and say yes to as many opportunities as possible, even if you don't know how you're going to get there, right? So we had a philosophy early on where, hey, if you know that we can deliver, you know, we can deliver 70% of what the customer is asking for, you know, let's go say yes and then figure it out later. So openness and comfort with uncertainty in the face of fear, but then saying yes, when that meets with luck or the opportunity, that's when a lot of the magic happens. That's when a lot of the success is created. And we've been lucky, again, to be a beneficiary of all of that.
What if you say yes to the wrong thing?
Yeah, that's the, you know, lessons learned, right? Like, you have to have the ability to, you know, fail gracefully. So that's one of our hiring criteria. Like, we look for team members who know how to fail gracefully as opposed to perfectionists. So failing gracefully is a very, very important part of success as well.
Talk a little bit more about this mission, this mission drive you have for the company.
Sure. Yeah. So for me, you know, I'll connect it to, you know, so my deep, like, inner drive that I have. So I, you know, when I reflect, like, I don't really have a drive to go make more money. You know, if I look at my life, like, I've never had money, but at the same time, it's never got in the way of me living the best life I want. Like, I've lived in the most beautiful places. I've traveled to the most beautiful places, yet I've never had money. So it's really actually, you know, like, I want to make an impact, want to make a contribution, because, you know, somehow the forces of the universe have put me at the intersection of having the technical skills, having the ability to, you know, go recruit a team and advisors, as well as business skills. And hey, at the same time, what the future needs, which is more and more semiconductor chips and better chips. So if you combine it all of that, you know, I think there's, you know, bigger forces driving me to a point where I am, and I owe it to myself and, you know, to the world to make a contribution as a result of that. So it really goes down to the deep inner core, where, you know, I can't give you one word or one sentence where it comes from, but, you know, when I actually look at all these factors, you know, there's a reason why I'm here at the intersection of all of these skills, as well as, you know, at this time with all these abilities. So got to make a contribution.
Well, we're glad you're here. And, you know, the Midwest is lucky that you landed at University of Michigan. Thanks for everything you're doing and for sharing your story.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. And yeah, Midwest is, you know, Michigan, well, of course, Midwest in general is a really important part of my life. And it has a very special place in my heart. So go Blue.
You can read more about today's guest by visiting WUWM.com. Don't forget, you can also listen to the show as a podcast if you'd like to take us on the go. Just search for Midwest Moxie wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is Midwest Moxie, a show about our region's visionary entrepreneurs and the experiences that shape them. I'm your host, Kathleen Gallagher, Executive Director of Five Lakes Institute. Lindsay Chepkema was focused on her job as Vice President of Brand and Content at a global provider of marketing software. The idea of starting a company hadn't occurred to her. That changed when Scott Dorsey, an Indianapolis entrepreneur who sold his company to Salesforce for $2.5 billion, reached out to discuss the podcast she was producing. Lindsay told him the podcasts were just one piece of a bigger strategy. She knew exactly how to disrupt business-to-business or B2B marketing and make it better in the process. 3 years later, Lindsay is founder and CEO of Casted, an Indianapolis startup with nearly 50 employees, a growing list of customers that includes IBM, Salesforce, and PayPal, and $9.5 million of investor funding. Lindsay, welcome to Midwest Moxie.
Thank you. And thanks so much for that lovely intro. It's good to be here.
Before starting Casted, you spent the first 15 years of your career at 8 different organizations. Were there times when you thought maybe you were doing too much job hopping?
Well, I hadn't. This feels like a therapy session now. I hadn't counted them. So I think that it can definitely feel that way. Marketers move around a lot. And now I see that gave me a lot of experience, but in the moment it was a lot of what now, what next, you know, where am I going to land? Where's this going kind of thing.
Well, in terms of experience, it was always brand and content, but it was a range of products you were marketing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I have seen, it's all been B2B marketing, always kind of on the brand and content side of things, but everything from a life science product that scanned health and beauty products for contamination. So like manufacturers were our audience, onto economic development and a kind of a boutique app manufacturer, to agencies serving really large enterprise companies. I feel like I've seen it all as far as B2B marketing and content and branding is concerned.
And a lot of tech. You really got to look at the way marketing was changing and the technology that was coming in, right?
Yeah, both as a user myself. I mean, my first job, I was the marketing person for a small but mighty economic development organization where I literally created our first website. If that tells you anything about the early days of websites, like I got a program and made the website, and and first adopter of HubSpot at another company that I worked at, and where we implemented email marketing, and I had to introduce the company to the idea of content, like early days as a user. And then also on the agency side, seeing what was available and seeing what kind of opportunities and challenges that large enterprise companies were starting to have and starting to wrestle with. A lot of it revolves around technology advances and channels that have emerged over the last 2 decades.
The company you were at before you founded Casted, Emarsys, when you were there, you had kind of a novel idea at the time of launching a B2B podcast that highlighted marketing leaders talking about their craft. The internal team and the salespeople loved it, but you weren't able to prove how it impacted the business.
Yeah, and that was super frustrating, right? So I knew this was 2016 when we launched the show or started working on the show. I knew that it was the right way to go. I knew that as a consumer of podcasts, from a business perspective, that I was not the only one, that I was getting a ton of value out of it, that I was connecting with brands in a different way because this medium existed. Because I was leading a brand and content team for a company that's trying to be more human and trying to develop more of a personality and relationships with an audience, I knew it was so clear to me that this was the way forward. But the amount of kind of raised eyebrows of like, a podcast? Like, what are we gonna talk about? Like, what is this gonna be? It was met with some like, yeah, how's this gonna work? And because of that, there was a lot of interest, there was a lot of excitement. And to your point, yeah, it was virtually impossible to prove that it was doing anything for us other than anecdotal excitement and some feedback here and there internally and externally. It was virtually impossible to show the impact that it was making on the business.
Well, it was indirect or, you know, subtle selling, right? Which maybe the marketing people weren't used to.
Yeah. I mean, I think from a content marketing perspective, any content marketer is used to that. It's all about building relationships, building trust, establishing credibility, sharing thought leadership. It's the long game of marketing. It is the marathon, whereas the demand gen side is much more of the sprint. But other forms, other tactics, other strategies that are equally as valuable have the ability to show their worth. Traditionally, have their ability to show their worth a lot easier than content does. Which therein lied my problem, is that I was doing these things that I knew were working. I knew they were, and we had big fans and we were hearing great feedback. But in order to say to my CEO, who also, by the way, was a big fan, hey, this is what it's doing. These are the sales that it's influencing. This is the revenue that it's driving. That was a problem.
Well, the good thing is it caught Scott Dorsey's attention. And, you know, he's legendary in the Midwest for his exact target, the company he built that sold to Salesforce. Tell us about the conversations the two of you had after he reached out to you and what was going through your mind as he talked to you.
Sure. So Scott, after he built and sold Exact Target, after those days, he thankfully for me and a lot of other entrepreneurs here in Indy stuck around, and he and a few partners started a venture firm and venture studio called High Alpha. And so he reached out to me because they were interested in the concept and idea of B2B podcasting as an opportunity in the market. And so he got wind, I don't know from where, I think he was probably a big fan of the show we were doing, but he got wind that we were doing the show and that we were such B2B brand doing a podcast, and just kind of wanted to ask why, how, what's it doing? What do you wish it was doing? And so, yeah, came by surprise to me that he reached out, but he did. And it's a big part of the reason that Casted exists today.
Well, as he started picking your brain, you started telling him, you know, what you thought the solution was. And in the end, you pretty much told him you were the solution, right?
That was not my intention going into it, but yes. So he said, hey, I'd love to talk with you. I said, of course, Scott Dorsey. Yes, of course I will talk to you. I guess I could probably make the time for that. And we got together and he's like, yeah, we're thinking about B2B podcasting, you know, tell me your experiences. And I was like, look, you know, the reason that we have a show is not for the sake of having a show. The reason we have a show is to connect with our audience on a more human level and to serve our sales team in a way that helps them serve their prospects and customers on a more human level. It's all part of a much bigger integrated marketing strategy, which, by the way, is the future of B2B marketing. Like, that's being more human, establishing connections with people. There's no better way to do that than to invite them in on a conversation, which is exactly what a podcast does. So it's a part of the future. It is not a tool, you know? And he was like, well, tell me more. And so he pushed the button that unlocked all of my thoughts that apparently had been building over 15 years in this space, and watching, you know, everything that you mentioned, watching technology emerge, watching channels emerge, watching digital marketing not become a thing, but become the thing, leading to a whole lot of frustration and a lot of pressure on marketers like me and teams like the team that I was leading. And to say, you know, the playbook that we've all been working from in B2B marketing is officially now outdated. It's time for a new one. All of the ingredients are here. We just need a new way forward. And by the way, if you do it, I'm doing it. Like, we're doing this together. And thankfully he liked that idea. So off we went.
So what you told him in all these conversations is really what Casted became. And let's talk about that. You know, it's a software company with a B2B marketing platform that houses for customers all their video, audio, and written communications. Why is that important?
So it's important because connection is important, right? So as humans, we're hardwired for connection. That's why people are listening to this program right now, right? They like to hear, literally hear from people, and hear ideas. And that's important. And now we have the ability as marketers to deliver that content that it serves as connective tissue between our brands and our audiences. However, because of this old playbook, everything was still really relying first and foremost on written word, like blog, blog, blog all day long. And then in your abundant spare time, create shows like this. And that's now backwards. Now we need to start there. We need to start with rich audio and video content that should serve as the center of everything. And a lot of brands are starting to see that. A lot of brands are starting to do that, which is why you're seeing more really creative content, audio and video, both emerging. However, other than Casted, there's not a way to unify it all and to make it something that does more than just go out to the world and get published. But how can those marketing teams go back and reuse it, break it down into smaller pieces, atomize it across other channels, get maximum value out of it, and really expand the possibilities of all the connections that they could be making with that original investment in creativity and conversation. So yeah, pulling it all into one place and making it measurable is why Casted is here.
And you say that Casted has the first amplified marketing platform. Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, so that's what the term that we've coined to encompass this new approach, this next generation of content marketing, that says, start with conversation, start with rich audio and video content, yes, publish it, get it out to the world, but then what else can you do with it? How can you go back, repurpose it, identify opportunities to create more with what you already have, to create net new, and then amplify it, right? So there's that whole idea of amplifying that content, taking something that's meant for one channel, like a podcast, and amplifying it across many other channels, and then understanding the impact that it's making, the influence that it's driving for the business as a whole. That's the premise of amplified marketing. And yeah, sure, you can do that without Casted. You can do that without what we're calling an amplified marketing platform, but that is the infrastructure. That is the structure that helps make it all happen a whole lot easier by providing access to that content, making it measurable, helping you amplify it.
So the advantage of having your platform is I might go back and I might find a quote from one podcast and another piece of content from a webinar and put them together and make some new content, right? That's what you mean by amplifying.
Yep. So if you have all of your audio and video content in one place from, you know, 10 shows over the last 10 years, it's pretty difficult to find that one mention when your customer said that one thing about that one topic. And then when your CEO said that one thing about that same topic, and then identify opportunities to reuse them. Like that's where you start now, is to say, okay, this is what we want to talk about. What do we already have? And then go create something net new. And then how am I going to get it out into the world? Maximize my reach by getting as much value out of it as possible by breaking it down and amplifying it across channels, and then measuring its impact.
So 3 years into this new phase for you, what's been one of the big challenges of building a startup?
Oh, man. I feel like the challenges and the opportunities and the excitement and the hard times are like two sides of the same coin always. But it's constantly constantly learning, which is both exciting and exhausting. Constantly growing faster than the company, which is very fast, which is, again, exciting and exhausting. And scaling not only the product and not only what we can offer our customers, but also this team, you know, as we evolve and as we change and as we grow, is maintaining our culture, maintaining this team, making sure everyone's taken care of. It's a lot. It's a challenge.
Well, I love the way one entrepreneur, Scott Dorsey, teased out another entrepreneur who didn't know she was an entrepreneur. And now it's going to be fun watching what you do with Casted in coming years. Thanks so much for sharing the story of it with us.
Oh, goodness. Thank you so much for wanting to listen to it.
You can read more about today's guest by visiting WUWM.com. Don't forget, you can also listen to the show as a podcast if you'd like to take us on the go. Just search for Midwest Moxie wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, Kathleen Gallagher. Midwest Moxie was created by executive producer Audrey Nowakowski and me. Today's episode was produced by Ellie Ellis. Join us next Sunday at 7 p.m. to hear from more visionary Midwestern founders building innovative companies. That's right here on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.